is presented by Sacca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
No new offer sheets yet, but the day is young. We are in downtown Buffalo, of course, inside of KeyBank Center. Our Sabres Live Studios kicking off Tuesday, we believe, on this week where we've been chock full of great guests. Louis Crevier yesterday, Beck Malenstein coming up later today, and a special former Sabre later on in the week. So stay tuned for that with Marty and Brian. Offer sheets are one thing.
Yes.
But are you still thinking, real quick, that there's a big trade Buffalo might make?
I mean, yeah, I think that, look, this Connor Hellebuyck thing has always been on the back burner, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes things on the back burner can still steam up, right? They can still, like, boil over. And, you know, the more and more you listen to some of the still active insiders, because some of them are on vacation right now. They're at the cottage. But the more and more you listen, you're like, could there still be something? We talked about Patrick Kane yesterday, and I almost feel like a Patrick Kane connection may be in an insurance policy for if you have to lose a forward in a trade and you're preparing something. Like, I feel like that is where this is all circling to.
Krabs filing for arbitration this week, obviously, was something we touched on yesterday. And Elliot Friedman, as you mentioned, from Sportsnet, elaborating a little bit more on Winnipeg and Winnipeg Buffalo and Hellebuyck.
They signed Skinner. I thought that was a really interesting signing. I think we all know about the elephant of the room. We'll see what happens with Hellebuyck. They have talked about, can they convince him to come back? I think that's going to be a really hard thing to do. I'm not counting on that. The more I hear about it, the more I believe that the biggest hurdle with the Sabres was they were getting the fourth overall pick from Buffalo and they wanted to keep eight. Buffalo was like, no, if we're giving you four, we have to get eight back. I think Winnipeg wanted both those picks, and that's why it didn't happen. I don't know where this goes, but I think it's going to be hard to convince Hellebuyck to stay.
Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts, Sportsnet. And of course, as always, check out the entirety of it at sportsnet.ca. When
the biggest thing, for as you mentioned, is the contract that they gave to Stuart Skinner. So now, like, is Stuart Skinner...
I don't see that as a real thing at all, quite honestly. Comrie moved on. They needed the backup.
It's not the regular backup for a Connor Hellebuyck.
But Skinner's also not a true one anymore either. So he's got to find a chair. Skinner lands on a chair with a team that still has cap space. So I don't see it as a big, big, big deal. I really don't.
I see it that it was, for me, preparing for an eventual Connor Hellebuyck departure and having
of it,
a 1B, maybe a 2+, being with whoever's going to be there. So, and giving them a 2-year deal at, you know, almost $4 million, to me, that's
not much money in today's game.
Yeah, but that's too much for a Connor Hellebuyck type backup. Like, if you have a Connor Hellebuyck,
I mean, it's spending more than Carolina would spend on any of their three goalies.
Absolutely.
For now.
And the other thing,
but
too,
that's the thing. If the back burner is still on a warm to mid setting.
Yes.
Carolina or Buffalo or other are the ones that are going to make this happen.
I think it's Buffalo.
Because Carolina's still got the space.
Carolina still has the space. Carolina would have to give up probably Pyotr Kochetkov in the deal. I think if you're Winnipeg,
you realize what you're saying here. You're acquiring a 3-time Vezina winner and MVP, and your concern is giving up Kochetkov?
No. I'm saying, like, for Winnipeg, if I can make that deal, I'd rather make it with Buffalo and get Nalukanen in return as opposed to Kochetkov in return. That's where I see it. I think there's more available through the Buffalo side. The other thing, too, is, as Elliot Friedman said, I don't know that it will be easy to welcome back Connor Hellebuyck. Hellebuyck may just be ready to move on. Also, this is the year for Connor Hellebuyck to do it because he has a no movement clause. He can actually handpick where we want to go to the team. Starting next July, he has a 10-team approved. So basically, a 22 or 21 team no trade and 10, but even then you don't have full control, right? So I think like for Connor Hellebuyck to put pressure would be now, because he has that full no movement clause. In a year from now, he can still say, I want to go to those 10 teams, but it's not as much of your control as this is right now.
Barrett Hayton's offer sheet situation, Utah, New Jersey, is going to be resolved by tomorrow. Leo Carlson's, Philadelphia, Anaheim, later in the week. These are big stories, none bigger than Carlson, obviously. We're still waiting on how hurt, if at all, we would love to say, Connor Bedard is,
yes,
from his summer incident last week, or over the weekend, I should say. Who's the next to get $18 million plus? Is it Makar on an extension? Is it Celebrini? Is it Bedard? And are they the? Is it Quinn Hughes? Like, what are you thinking here? And based on Aaron Portsline reporting out of Columbus, like the suggestion that if this doesn't go Philadelphia's way, i.e. land their big fish in Leo Carlson, that they might well just table another offer sheet to Fantilli on the Jackets.
Well, I can tell you this, is that Mike Greer is not going to make Anaheim's mistake and let Celebrini go on basically extended before the season starts or before the year is over. Now, maybe
right, he's not even in this conversation here.
But you talk about who's going to get $18 million next, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it will be a Kel McCarr. I think Kel McCarr is the one that's going to get $18 million or more next. Mm-hmm. I think Celebrini could probably come in at a little bit below $18 million. Look, I think that Leo Carlson's offer sheet obviously was a big swing by Danny Briere and saying we're going to go to 18. Now, there was, some report out there that said that before Leo Carlson signed the offer sheet with the Flyers, that they went back to Anaheim and maybe tried to do something in and around the $15 million range. And then Anaheim says, no, we're not willing to go there. And then he said, okay, thank you. I'll sign the offer sheet for 18 schmil for 5 years. Now, I don't know if maybe Leo Carlson says, I have 18 for 5 years. And maybe we don't want to go to 18 now, so let's do 15 for three, like saying, and then I'll get much more after that, and I'll get 20 plus. I don't know what the terms were, but apparently the dollar figure were about 15, and Anaheim said no, and then he signed. So I think Celebrini comes in under 18. I think Quinn Hughes is going to be about that.
You think
that.
Celebrini will eventually be under 18?
For the next deal, potentially, yes.
Oh, my gosh. I think he gets the max.
You think he'll get 20 and a
mm-hmm.
half?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that would be huge.
And if it's not 20, it's over 18 and very close to 20.
I mean, if there's a player that could get, I think Kel McCarr is the next one to do so. Okay. I think Celebrini could take a little longer. You don't want to wait too long, though. But no. I think it could be maybe even in season. Maybe you let the season start and you get it done before Christmas.
You know, Nikishin is still an interesting one with Carolina. Drysdale has filed for arbitration with Philly. Edvinson needs a new deal from Detroit. And the defense market has changed in rapid fashion as well here, with the Minchikov deal mm-hmm. north of seven, and now Simone Nemitz north of seven with
seven
Calgary.
And a half,
it's
yeah.
a five-year deal as well. Like, every day for the foreseeable future, people should celebrate some of these Sabre contracts on the blue line, especially Matias Samuelson.
Well, yeah, but even, honestly, even like, if you look at Dahlin and you say, Dahlin's $11 million, all the way until 2032,
but he's
still
the number one pick.
Years.
But, like, seriously, would you not want Samuelson ahead of any of those three defensemen I mentioned?
Oh, yeah.
Nikishin, Drysdale, and Edvinson.
100%. Right. I think Drysdale would be the closest one to me. Maybe okay. Nikishin, but I think that, yeah, 100%. And even Nemetz at 7.5.
Hasn't shown me enough.
Like, no, okay.
Like, he had an unbelievable tear where he jacked up his goal-scoring total last
yes.
year, but he never seemed to have the trust of the coaching staff, right, to the level that you would have hoped based on his draft pedigree.
Draft pedigree is right there, and it's still hanging around, but you're looking at New Jersey, and you're like...
And I hope it works for him in Calgary. I really do.
Yeah, well, he moved on, right, when they made the trade. But I'm just looking at, like, when he was in New Jersey, he was always pushed aside. It was Luke Hughes. It was others. So Nemitz was never, like, the main guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're paying him like he's going to be a main guy. I don't know. I think that was a big chance they took.
Calgary is still a tough look, though, right? I mean, I guess it's based on, you know, where they're at in their rebuild. But so I mean, they've moved. You know, they've moved. It. They are just a. I struggle, obviously, as you can tell, as I yammer my way through this. Like, I just can't really articulate my expectations for them. I understand what they've tried to do on the blue line, and I like Middleton, and I like White Cloud, so that should help. And I guess if Dustin Wolf repeats from the previous year with this defense corps, like, maybe they can. And let's not forget, 2 years ago when Wolf was A1, they missed out at mid-90s on a playoff spot. They were good enough, but they couldn't score. My concern is they still might not be able to score.
May not be able to score. And then, look, Devin Cooley is a really good, capable backup, and he's proven this year. So they're all set in that. I was trying to figure out, and I mean, there was a lot of rumors with Leo Carlson that there was four teams involved in trying to sign him to an offer sheet. And I thought maybe Calgary was or would have been in that conversation, trying to say, hey, this is a swing we may take, get ourselves better, right? I think that Detroit could have been in there too, because you may lose Larkin, try to replace him with Leo Carlson. So Philly obviously was in that conversation. And then the other one that I wonder was the Columbus Blue Jackets. Because teams that are using offer sheets now will have to use offer sheets because they may not be able to get players to waive their no trade to go to those teams, and you're looking at smaller markets and whatnot. Now, Columbus has their own issues when it comes to, like, players that could be offer sheeted and players that have to sign.
Fantilli A1. Like, Fantilli, what do you think Fantilli is going to get now?
I think Fantilli is going to be around the $14 million.
Holy smokes. Wow.
Yeah. You know,
and we've seen the upside, but he hasn't established it yet.
But again, like, people are going to say, well, you don't want to give 18 to Celebrini and you're going to give 14 to Fantilli. I just think that the projections make it that Fantilli could probably be that 12 and a half, but maybe you give him an extra million to make it 13.5 or close to 14, so that you're like, hey, we got you locked up long term. And again, now we go back to Tage Thompson making 7 and change, and you say Fantilli would be making twice Tage Thompson? Fantilli would be making $2 million more than Rasmus Dahlin? Like, that's where this new way of making business is going to separate. Number one, the good GMs and the bad GMs. I feel like over the last few years, it was just about managing your assets. Your cap stayed the same and whatever. Now the good GMs are going to have to project, say, hey, where is my going in 4 years, 5 years? Where are the projection, my players and
Bill
all
Zito.
Of that? Bill Zito.
Eric Tulski.
Yeah, absolutely.
Incredible.
I'm actually, like, I was impressed with, Pittsburgh may have been also in the Leo Carlson.
Dubas has been on a pretty good run here,
Dubas
too.
Dubas has been really good.
You know.
And so I'm impressed with what Dubas has been able to do in Pittsburgh.
And still has ample space to be a player in this new offer sheet world if something comes to it that, you know, the challenge. Obviously, Pittsburgh may not be as desirable a spot for a player to sign right now based on their unproven next wave beyond the aging core that still continues to be productive, but not much time left, obviously, for Malkin, Letang,
Malkin
and Crosby.
Malkin can still rip a clapper on a breakaway.
Yes, he can.
I'm still going to be sorry
about
that.
Well, would you anticipate, real quick here, because there's so much to get to, and again, Beck Malenstein coming up on the show, do you think there will be another offer sheet?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think they're waiting to see. Everybody's waiting to see what happens with the Leo Carlson offer sheet, and then it's going to generate more.
And do you think we will be through with the Larkin saga by the end of July?
No.
Okay.
I don't see how this is going to come out of the dark room that they're in right now unless Detroit takes 40 cents on the dollar as a return. Because I think they're in a bad position. You want to make the move, keep things quiet. Don't make it official. Brady Tkachuk got traded. Why? Because nobody, they had their conversation quiet, and then boom, you can get a return. But I think that Larkin is going to be tough.
And remember, there's trickle-downs here, both sides, with this Carlson offer sheet decision. If Anaheim retains, they're going to have to work miracles to get the Gauthier deal done. If Philadelphia lands Carlson, they're going to have some challenges, not on a, like, not a nightmarish situation, but they've got two key players that filed for arbitration in Zegras and Drysdale, and that's going to challenge them if they have to make it work along with the $18 million for
Crosby. Where did the Cutter Gauthier saga start? In Philly. And Philly had to trade him to Anaheim because he didn't want to be in Philly.
Right.
Now, Danny Briere puts an offer sheet for Leo Carlson, which eventually may squeeze Cutter Gauthier out of the money that he deserves.
Yeah.
How about this turn of around that Danny's playing?
It's crazy. Claude Giroux ultimately did resign in Ottawa.
And Philly.
What?
Was it Philly or Ottawa?
Ottawa.
I thought it was Philly that they were saying.
Sam was trying to convince you yesterday that Philly was almost done, and I'm like, so yes, it's
okay.
Ottawa.
Well, good.
It's $5 million. It's a $2 million base, but $3 million in attainable bonuses. So likely a $5 million.
Okay,
deal.
That caught me by surprise because I thought
I love the element of surprise here on the show.
I thought they were all but done bringing Claude Giroux to Philly, but we're waiting on the answer on the Leo Carlson. I'm like, Anaheim's gonna match. And then they would probably go there. But no, a twist here in the soap opera that is the NHL. Claude Giroux goes back to the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a needle mover, obviously, because...
No, but it's still good. He's a good veteran, can play a bunch of different roles. I would have liked him, you know, here in Buffalo or Philly or Montreal or whatever. I think Claude Giroux is a guy that I want to cheer for.
Today is the 7th of July. The NHL regular season schedule will be announced on July 16th at 1 p.m. with opening night matchups. And they will be on, hang on a sec. They're on July 15th. So we get the opening nights the night before. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. 84-game season. Yay. But who do you want to see?
I love it.
No one loves it. The players certainly aren't going to love it.
I love that there's only 4 preseason games.
No one remembers the preseason games.
Well, yeah,
ever.
But I get that. But 84
anyway,
games...
who do you want to see on opening night for the Sabres?
Montreal. Okay. I want to see Montreal Canadiens, which is very rare because Montreal and Toronto always start and they get the league and the Canadian viewership and all of that kicked off. But who knows? Like, I would say go to Toronto, then 2 nights later come to Buffalo, start on the road. Like, let's go. Let's have Montreal come back here after the Game 7 that we just experienced a month and a half ago.
Okay. That leaves me 30 other options that I will gladly accept than have Montreal in here for opening night.
Toronto. You don't like that. So we'll go to 29 options.
Okay. 94 and a half points.
Okay.
Over, under.
Over.
Sabres for this coming season. And what will it get them?
Okay. Over 94 and a half. This is what I'm saying. Now, last year, there was 9 teams in the Eastern Conference that had 95 points and more. Well, Washington Capitals missed out on the playoffs at 95. Funny enough, there was only... 12 teams, there was 13 teams in the NHL that had over 95 and over, only 4 teams out west. So 9 in the east, 4 out west. I think the east is still going to be the better conference. The Atlantic is still going to be the better division. But I think the Sabres will not match what they did last year. Maybe they do, who knows. But I say 100 plus again for the Sabres this upcoming year.
Vegas did sneak in under the wire on that cut last year.
Which, by the way, in the office upstairs, they had a poll going on. Would you rather sneeze glitter or hiccup bubbles? And now I have the hiccups, and I answered bubbles. Can you imagine if bubbles came out right now as I have the hiccups?
It's funny. I'm more of a sneezer and more of a glitter guy, so this works out perfectly for, you know, the picture we're trying to create here on Sabres Live. Beck Malenstein is coming up, and great insight, of course, for him on what he's accomplished so far in Buffalo and what he looks to do in the future.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
NHL schedule is out next week. Can't wait for you to create unforgettable game nights for your group. 10 or more. We've got group ticketing experiences, save on box office pricing, get exclusive access to experiences like photos on center ice, post-game slap shots, Sabres access, and more. And you can go to sabres.com/groups to learn more.
McAvoy away from Malenstein. Kiki pressured by Rasmus Dahlin. Couldn't move the puck, and now he's on the ice. Geeky is. There's a shot. Scores! Deflected by Malenstein! Beck Malenstein picks up the goal, and the Sabres are up 5-0 in Boston against the Bruins.
It was a season of impact, regular season and postseason for Beck Malenstein. He's got himself a new 6-year deal with the Sabres, and we're thrilled to have him here on Sabres Live today. Beck, congratulations on the deal. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Thank you very much.
Do you like every time you scored this year, Rob Ray went with the, like he was your biggest fan, right? And even on that goal, like Dan is talking about the goal and you can hear Razor, getting all jittery behind the scenes. So do you like having Rob Ray in your corner?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely worse people to have your back. So I'll take Razor any day I can get him.
Well, Rob would probably appreciate the dollars that you signed for in your contract.
It's not league minimum.
but specifically, he would be the type that would negotiate for this, which I'm not saying you did, Beck, but we couldn't help but laugh that the deal was $17,500,002. So what? Why the extra two?
What are you going to do with the $2?
I mean, you guys can trust me that wasn't my doing. I wasn't involved in the final negotiations of those numbers. I trusted my agents to get all that kind of stuff done. But all in all, just extremely happy to be back and just keep what we have. Such a good thing rolling in Buffalo.
So, I mean, the season ends, obviously, second round loss to Montreal Canadiens. And then did you go right away into... With your agent negotiations, did it take a little time? Obviously, July 1, you would have been a UFA, so there was a little bit of a timetable on it. So how did that start, and was it tough as a player to go through this time signing a contract?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously my first time going through it, so it was a whole new experience for me. From the get-go, you know, I said it, you know, in interviews, everything, you know, my first priority was staying in Buffalo. I had such a great time throughout those two seasons, where we were as a team, the direction we were going, the group in the room. But yeah, it definitely took some time and I started to get, you know, feeling a little uncomfortable. You don't really know what the future is going to bring at that point. And, you know, you start mentally preparing yourself for, oh, is something going to change? You don't really know. And, but you know, as it got closer, we were able to sort it out. Some really good conversations to get to that point. And all in all, I'm thrilled to be back, be a part of the city, be a part of this team, and just keep what we've got moving forward.
How about the changes, though? Because those are always inevitable, seemingly. And you've lost some significant players from a year ago, including a guy that you played a lot with on your line in Jordan Greenway.
Yeah, I think it's just the nature of the beast, right? It's a business. You learn that pretty quickly. Guys are going to move. Pieces are going to move. I had a lot of fun playing with Greener. You know, I thought we had great chemistry on the penalty kill. We could get things rolling quite often. And, yeah, those guys are going to be missed. Tucky, Bo, these are huge pieces to our team that aren't going to be there anymore. But it's the job of the group to step in and fill those voids, which isn't necessarily going to be easy, but it's a great challenge to keep our group moving in the right direction.
So a couple of years ago, the draft was at Sphere. You end up getting traded to Buffalo. What's the biggest thing that you've learned from the team, one, and from the region, you know, this Western New York, Southern Ontario, the fan base? So one of each, the biggest thing that you've learned from the team, the organization, and from the city?
Yeah, I think the team, it's really just... seeing the growth of the group, the skill that was always there, that just maybe needed that one extra year to really turn that page, and that was so much fun this season. I think a lot of guys, you know, went through a lot of hard times for a lot longer than I had to, obviously just with it being the 1 year, but you really started to appreciate how hard it was to win, but how good of a feeling it was, and you didn't want to turn that page once we kind of found our recipe. And I think the biggest thing for the city was finally being able to take the truth that it's a hockey city. You know, everyone said, oh, it's a bigger hockey city than a football city. And I'm like, have you seen the Bills fans? I don't think that's true. These guys are crazy. And, you know, seeing the passion that our city had rallying around us coming down the stretch there and into the playoffs was it was just so much fun to be a part of, so much fun to play in. Every small community was rallying behind, you know, our neighborhood that we lived in. You had kids running around in jerseys, and it was just really exciting to see. And honestly, it was a huge, huge motivator to come back. You see that kind of passion, you know, in a fan base, around a team, in a community, and it's something you just want to immerse yourself into and hopefully keep that energy around.
Some days, Zach Benson would be confused as one of those kids running around in a jersey. He was on the show recently, and he's exactly what you're referring to when you talk about the growth and the next wave of players that allows you to be super confident, I'm sure. Benson also cited you as a very vocal leader.
Yes.
And Marty perked up, and you're going to tell us why you think Benson says that about you.
Oh, well, Benny and I have a lot of conversations throughout the day, so maybe that ties into part of it. I mean, I'm a pretty loose guy. I take some flack for maybe talking too much sometimes. Like, I love just to be around the guys, just being myself, have a lot of fun with it. And I think Benny's pretty similar, and that's probably why that ties in there a little bit. I mean, he can get anybody going in any kind of argument at any time. He's a great guy to have in your room. And then when it translates onto the ice, he's just such a pleasure to play with, to watch play. And I'm really, really happy the team was able to lock him up for as long as they did.
Does a new contract still means a team dinner on the road during the season? Because that was the big thing. When I was playing, as if you signed a new deal, and at the time it was like if it was over $1 million, you had to buy a team dinner on the road. So I'm wondering if you're like, hey, you know, first trip, you're like, guys, I got a dinner, or you're letting Benny do it because he signed for more money.
Oh, we'll see. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if that standard has remained. We'll have to see what happens when we step in. But, you know, if that's the case, more than happy to do it. It's really just such an honor to be able to play in the league, let alone, you know, for that much time. And I'm just really excited to be a part of Buffalo for the majority.
Well, I'm guessing if you know, did take the team out for dinner, it would be more than glorified sandwiches. But Dennis Gilbert is back in the organization.
He is back.
And
he
this
sure
means
is.
An opportunity for the two of you to create more content just like this. Listen in, Beck.
If it's crispy chicken, it's one. If it's grilled chicken, it's 10.
I agree 100%. We don't know what else is coming.
Let's just say it's grilled.
It's 10.
The 10 is going to be harder to fill, I think. I think we have a good one coming. Let's go 10. Grilled chicken sandwich.
Okay, grilled chicken's
10.
Gross. 10.
I mean, it's not a good list.
No, a crispy chicken sandwich is better than a cheesesteak.
Yeah, I wish we could switch those.
Yeah, but we can't.
Okay, cheesesteak.
Cheesesteak. I mean, an authentic Philly cheesesteak is pretty good.
Blind sandwich rankings didn't appear to go as well for the two of you as you would have hoped. Now that you know what's actually on the menu, how would you re-rank those sandwiches?
Oh, all right. Well, I at this point in time, I hadn't been exposed to a beef on weck. So
okay.
I've been to Charlie the Butcher. It's absolutely delicious. I'd probably catch a lot of heat if that didn't move to one. Well, we could definitely move that up there. We could probably flip-flop the cheesesteak into three. You know, other than that, it's an interesting list. I think it depends on the time of day for a lot of these things. I'm happy with the chicken sandwich and the BLT being at the bottom. Probably move the turkey club down there, too. I love a meatball sub. PB&J is a nice comfort food, and, you know, a nice breakfast bagel is pretty solid, too. So I think if we flip-flop the beef and weck, we'd probably be in a pretty good spot.
See, I would probably put the PB&J 10 because I am not a PB&J fan, so that's number one. And if you swap sausage with bacon, egg, and cheese on a bagel,
that's true.
And if it's an everything bagel, that may be top two. So all I'm saying, like, that's what. But I like how you're moving the beef on weck up the ladder a little bit. That was fun, you know. And obviously that was your first year, so we got to know a little bit of your personality and building that. What we also got to know this year in year two is your skill set. And it seems like most of the goals you scored this year were highlight reel goals. So much so that about February this year, I came up with the top five Malenstein's goal this year. And number five was a Minnesota goal where you drove the net, the puck went off your back and in. Then there was a great slap shot from the blue line. That was number four. The Oilers goal where you, you know, just... 3. You have to know that Montreal and Carolina were number 2 and 1, but that was before your goal against the San Jose Sharks. So I'm asking you, which one would you have number 1 now between the Montreal driving the back post on Montembeau, that was shorthanded, the Carolina one with the whoops, you know, going toe drag and through Freddie Anderson, or the San Jose goal? Which one would you have at number 1 right now?
I think the Carolina one's probably my top one. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to have a few moments like that go right for me this year. I'd love to tack on a few more of the Minnesota goals, the ugly goals. I like those too. So however they go in, I'll take them. But no, it was a lot of fun to have a few moments kind of go like that. And I think the Carolina one probably is the top for me.
Well, San Jose was brilliant because it was on home ice, obviously, much like the Carolina one. So it was as if people at home were getting a deja vu. Yes. Because it was like, this happened again? This is incredible. But whatever you do, do not undersell the importance of a 5-0 goal in a playoff game on the road against the Boston Bruins. So how does this team take that next playoff step based on everything you've been through?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, we came down to, you know, one shot in an overtime in game 7 in the second round, right? It's a minuscule change to, you know, potentially win that series. So I think we can have a lot of confidence coming into this year of what we were able to accomplish. And really just try to start the season the way that we did once we found that groove, kind of, you know, maybe a third of the way in. And if we can start that way, it's going to put us in a really good spot throughout the entire year, hopefully push to be in that playoff spot again. And you know, I think experience is everything. You know, if we step back into the playoffs with the experience that we gained from this past year, I think it just really allows the group to mature throughout moments. And I thought we did a great job of that this year, to be honest with you. I don't think there's too much that we would change with how we played, and just realize how important those small moments are. And, you know, maybe a little bounce here, a little change here, and we find ourselves in the conference final or maybe further. So we were super close. I think it leaves a taste in your mouth if you just, you know, you really want that last little bit more. And just it was such a fun time. I think the guys really enjoyed it. Obviously, it's the best time of year to be playing hockey, and hopefully we can replicate what we did to get there and then just take it a little further.
I remember my playoff experiences on the ice, but I think more memorable was off the ice when we had that room at the hotel and everybody's in, you know, in together playing cards, playing video games. Who was the ringleader in that room at the hotel, and who was in charge, and what did you do yourself? Were you more of a card player, a video game guy, just a chill and relaxed type of guy? What did you do in that room?
I mean, he's going to be missed. I would say Tucky was probably our ringleader for most things. He kind of led the way for that. So some people are going to have to pull their weight now to make up for him. But, you know, in the room, I think that was the most special thing about our group is, you know, at any given moment, you could just about find everybody in there. Guys just love spending time together. It didn't matter what it was. You know, I loved the PGA Tour on the Xbox. Hadn't played a lot of that and found that was a lot of fun. And you had guys playing cards, you had guys playing ping pong, guys just hanging out and chatting. Like, it was just, it like you said, it's a great time on the road. You know, when hockey is so exciting but so stressful at the same time, it's nice to be able to unwind with those guys a little bit. And yeah, our group really enjoyed it. I know it's pretty common for everybody, but I think it was just such a factor for us really throughout the whole year. You know, I've talked with guys and we said, you know, there's probably not one guy on the team that you couldn't go have a one-on-one dinner with and be totally fine. You know, we had such a tight-knit group. Everybody gets along really, really well, has a blast together. So all in all, just really special with what we were able to accomplish. And I think that was a huge part of it.
That's impressive. Marty and I have been doing this for almost 10 years together and have not had a one-on-one dinner together. So we're going to have to work on that.
We've had dates. We had a date in
Vegas. Henderson.
Henderson goes to the AHL. Sabres overnight. AHL, yes. Well, there was a Sabres game and everybody left after the game. We got an extra day in Vegas.
So it was COVID era. There was nobody in our section. We were wearing masks. It was unbelievable. What a night.
So we didn't have a one-on-one dinner, but we went to a hockey date together.
Hey, Beck, 262 NHL games now and not a single shootout attempt. Will that change this season?
I highly doubt it. I don't know how long it would have to go before Lindy taps me on the shoulder to head out there. Yeah, I think I have one career shootout attempt from junior up until now, and I broke my stick on my one chance. So
not your fault.
I don't know. We'll see. You know, I try to keep it polished in practice. I haven't had to buy donuts for the plane yet, so hopefully I'm not quite at the bottom. But yeah, it's not something I would necessarily say that I'm known for, and I'm not expecting the opportunity. But if that time comes, I'll be more than happy to step out there and give it my best.
Based on the highlight,
I was gonna say,
reel,
maybe a penalty shot.
Yeah, and
you could get tripped in a penalty shot, like because you've gotten breakaways and things like
but
that.
But in defense of the coaching staff, the Sabres were so good in shootouts this year that they may have ended things.
Oh, it wasn't. Yeah, we didn't have a lot of guys that were going to let it get down to my level. We have some guys who are pretty gifted in that.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. So I remember in Philly, we had a 3-mile run we needed to do in training camp, and Braden Coburn was so good that he earned the nickname Seabiscuit because he literally lapped us twice. Like, and so you are now the fastest skater in the history of the NHL from the like player tracking era. So is your nickname Usain Bolt, or have the guys given you, was that a part of negotiations? You're like, hey, I'm the fastest guy in the NHL. I need that $2 at the end, right? So was that
maybe that's what got it there? That's a very fair point. Maybe that's what got those $2 over the line. No,
but did that earn you a nickname at all?
No, nothing really. I mean, to be honest with you guys, I'm shocked that it lasted as long as it did. I thought, you know, McDavid would have caught wind of something and made a change the next game, and it would have been blown out of the water. So it's a cool little feather to have in my hat. It obviously just a fun little story to have, but I wish it was a little bit more of a hockey play. You know, winding up for an icing and then just having to skate back to your D zone after isn't quite as exciting. But no nicknames have come of it, anything like that. But, you know, all in all, kind of the same thing. It's just a fun little thing to have in the history books. Yeah.
Well, the speed burst came after the nickname Malin Goat, right?
Yes.
It might have, yeah.
So it just reinforces it. You still good with that nickname?
Sure. I mean, if people are willing to say it, I'll happily take it. It's one of those things I'm not going to complain
Twitter,
about.
Melon Goat. I love it. Exactly.
Barnside Brewing Company, how's it going?
It's great. Yeah, summertime is prime time over there. The patio's packed, the beers are flowing, business is booming. So, no, it's a lot of fun to see the energy over there throughout the summer. I'm really proud of what my parents and our neighbors have been able to put together and create that kind of community spot that people really seem to enjoy and like to gather around there. And yeah, very special to be a part of, and really happy for them.
Have you been involved in any of it, or is it strictly others in your family?
I mean, I've been involved in some very, very early on taste testing before it had even hit the brewery side. And then, you know, throughout a few years helping out on the family farm, we grow the hops on our side of the road. So being involved with that, helping my dad out when I can, obviously chasing around two kids now kind of slows that down a little bit. I'm not able to get out there and help out as much as I used to, but, no, it's a full family operation. You know, you get called upon to do different things and y'all get together to make some small things work. And yeah, it's really rewarding to see the passion that people have for it, and the support of it's been amazing.
In October, you said you were trying to pick up the guitar. Are you at that point now where you could play on the patio at the brewery and have entertained the people?
No, not even remotely close. I can't say I may have picked up the guitar twice since we talked about it, Marty, so I had to work on that a little bit. That's more my brother's gift. He went to university for musical jazz, so he's the singer of the family. He's got the music, not me. I can maybe pick it up to the point where I could accompany him, but that's about as far as I'm going to go. You don't need to see me open my mouth singing anytime soon.
Still pretty good. I mean, for 5 years in a row, my New Year's resolution was I was going to learn the guitar. I still don't know any chords, so you're still better.
Well, okay.
So that's good.
Well, so I'm assuming that you've never been able to attend Barnside Harvest Festival, which this year is happening September 11th to 13th, which is right when you're back here for training camp.
Yeah, that's unfortunate timing. I don't know what they were thinking, but I think it just kind of coincides. It was the only weekend that they could really make work. And it's just really unfortunate for me that, you know, playing on the East Coast, trying to get out early and get settled, It doesn't really allow us the chance to stay. You know, maybe at some point we'll do a little weekend fly back and see it. It's been a very, very special thing for them. You know, the small community that we live in here just outside of Vancouver has really rallied around it. People really, really enjoy it. It's gotten amazing support from them, and people are really excited for it returning every single year. So it's been a very cool, you know, new venture, and I'm just really happy that it's been as successful as it is, and I'd love to see it at some point.
Well, congrats to the organizers behind the scenes with your company and everybody else, because the musical talent you've assembled over the 4 years is incredible. One of my favorites, Mariana's Trench, is among the headliners this year.
Oh,
so maybe you and your brother will share the stage there at some point.
It's going to be a tough pull, but we'll see if that happens.
Beck, enjoy the rest of summer with family and friends, and we'll see you soon.
Awesome. Thank you guys very much. Pleasure.
He's a good one. 6-year deal for Beck, among the many stories of this offseason for the Sabres. Dazzled and Disturbed is straight ahead, and there's a new twist to it.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
The lead-in to D&D is OMG. Elliot Friedman reporting that the Maple Leafs are going to hire Daniel Alfredsson as an assistant coach. 25 years ago, this would have been unimaginable. It leaves me disturbed.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
And I feel I feel disturbed for Alfredsson. I feel disturbed for the Senators. I feel disturbed for the Maple Leafs.
This or that. Which fan base is more disturbed by that? Like, the Ottawa Senators are the Leafs fan base, honestly, but I guess whatever.
Unreal.
I mean,
the best part, though, like, Daniel is, like, up here as among most respected, for me, people I've ever met in the game. So I think that's why I'm like, oh, I wish he hadn't joined the Maple Leafs.
That he has scored... I've given up most goals to any player.
Oh,
in the
we
league.
See it in the Jager Sabre game notes every year. Exactly. And Heatley was very high on that list as well.
Yes, he is too.
Yes. Okay. Take us through. And again, I'm confused here. I don't know whether this is dazzled or disturbed. Producer Sam says dazzled, but I'm getting a little tired of seeing people wear too much goalie gear in places they shouldn't be wearing goalie gear.
This is a perfect lake attire, boat attire, full goalie gear on the boat. Make sure you have your life vest as well. So you're going to have many floating, what do you call it? Floating
flotation device. That's a Weeksyism. Look at this guy. Flotation
device. But
here's
where I'm disturbed. He's got the pads on the wrong leg. He's got the left pad on the right leg, but it is dazzling that, you know, probably a little scared of the boat. And you say you can wear your whole gear on the boat and they'll feel better. And he did.
That boat is afloat, unlike the U.S. at the World Cup.
Yeah, tough loss to Belgium last night, 4-1. U.S. never really played their game. They refused to go to the middle. And look, I'm not a soccer expert, but it was obvious they didn't want to play in the middle of the field. They kept going to the sides. Belgium kept countering it. A tough goal to make it 3-1 late in the first half. And tough loss. All three host nations lost in the round of 16, Canada, Mexico, and the U.S.
Tough loss for Jessie Pegula today.
Yes, she won the first set against Coco Gauff, lost the second and third set. She added tied 3-3 in the third set just to lose 6-3. And Naomi Osaka just lost right now as well. She was my favorite after beating Sabalenka a couple of days ago.
Happy birthday to someone who played three games for the Sabres, and I'll never forget his only goal. He played 3.5 minutes that game. It was at Madison Square Garden, and Travis Turnbull scored in a 4-1 win against the Rangers. This is about 15 years ago. Patrick Laliem, speaking of the Battle of Ontario and being on the wrong side of it, like Alfredsson was all the time. Patrick Laliem, former Sabre, 52 today. Roman Ender is 51, also former Sabre, but also Rochester American Calder Cup champion in 1996, and someone who's got a lot on his plate as the, once again, general manager of the Avalanche, Joe Sakic, 57 today.
So I remember Joe Sakic wearing the number 88 with the Quebec Nordiques, and then he switched to 19, so that's a long time ago. Roman Ender, my teammate in 97-98 with the Rochester Americans, and Patrick Laliem, a good buddy of mine, he was here covering the Canadian Canadians in the playoffs.
Soccer had the hand of God goal, Diego Maradona. The Sabres have something similar in team history. The author of it tomorrow on the show.